Hour number two of The Drive underway. Fan Run Radio coming to you live this afternoon from National Law Rex in Farragut. And we send things back to the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It's Marcus Young standing by with today's top four at four. Marcus, what do you got?
Thank you, Russell. At number one on Sunday, the Tennessee Volunteers men's basketball team will be facing off against Alcorn State on the SEC Network. They are 6-1. Alcorn is 3-5. Should be a good game.
No, it shouldn't. It should be a blowout. The Tennessee should win decisively, Marcus.
Well, I mean, a good game is in like, you know, like it's going to be a fun one for us to watch. That's what I meant. I'm sorry. I should have been more specific.
Enjoyable.
Enjoyable, yes.
Would be a, yeah, it's, you know, a stress-free day at the office, right?
That's what I'm hoping for. At number two, this is the championship weekend. Starting off with tonight, actually at 8 p.m., we have USC facing off against Utah for the Pac-12. Tomorrow is a full slate with TCU versus Kansas State, LSU versus Georgia, Tulane versus UCF, Clemson and North Carolina, and Purdue and Michigan. Are you guys going to watch any of the championship games?
Yeah, I'll be
100%
monitoring the Pac-12 game later on this evening. Got something to do tomorrow. I'm not going to be able to watch much of the SEC game, but certainly be monitoring the Pac-12 game and the Big 12 game tomorrow at noon. And I guess if those don't go our way, then we'll keep an eye on UCF and Tulane as well. As I know, probably if you're putting money on it, where's Tennessee going to go? Probably to the Cotton Bowl to play the winner of that game right now, it sounds like.
At number three, we got some news as our Captain America. Pulisic has been cleared to play for the U.S. versus the Netherlands in the World Cup of round 16. Obviously dealing with the abdominal injury that he had.
Abdominal contusion has healed for Captain America. He'll be in the lineup. We'll talk to Lucas about this coming up here in a few minutes. I don't know what it's... this kind of reminds me of the Cedric Tillman conversation we had with Keaton. Is 100% of Keaton better than 70, 75% of Tillman? Is 75% of Pulisic better than 100% of Brendan Aaronson? I'm not so sure it is. So that's a decision that Greg Berhalter will have to make tomorrow, maybe at some point during the course of the game, but I don't think he's going to sit this one out.
Yeah, I didn't really think that it was a chance that he was going to be out for it. Along with that, I was going to provide some updates for World Cup. Switzerland defeated Serbia 3-2. Cameroon defeats Brazil 1-0, which I was surprised by. South Korea defeats Portugal 2-1, and Uruguay defeats Ghana 2-0. But even with that 2-0 win for Uruguay, with South Korea's win, they move on and Uruguay is out.
Uruguay goes home. So what happens in that other group with Brazil moves on and Switzerland?
Yes.
I suppose by virtue of winning that game, which was a shootout, I think they won that 3-2. And so, yeah, Brazil and Switzerland will be moving on. Cameroon and Serbia, sorry, Uroš, going home.
And then finally, at number four, some good news for another finalist award. As Hendon Hooker has been named for the Manning Award, one of the 11 finalists given to the best quarterback in college football.
Oh, Peyton's got to get that across the finish line for Hendo Senko, doesn't he?
I would agree with that. Let's do it. This is our Heisman.
He's got to win something, man. I hope he does. All right. Thank you, Marcus. That is the Top 4 at 4. It's brought to you by National Law Rex. Come and ask about the nitric oxide tablets they have available here for both men and women's health. Helps with a variety of things, including cardiac and respiratory function. Nitric oxide, a naturally occurring chemical in your body. Many people are deficient, though. It decreases as you age. And you can come out here and take a quick test. It's a 15-second saliva test that'll show you your nitric oxide content. If you're running low, if you need more nitric oxide in your life, you can get a sample pack of 20 pills and four test strips that you take, you know, where for about a week or so, you can judge how it helps you out. And if you like it, you can buy a full month supply right here at National Law Rex. Best part is it's not a prescription deal. So you can come out here and get this over the counter. Find out more by talking to one of the pharmacists here at National Law Rex. Tell them you heard about it on The Drive. We're at 11134 Kingston Pike, right next to Wendy's out here in Farragut. And you can find out more online at nationallawrex.com. We go back to the busy Big Orange Phillies phone lines, and El Diablo is up next. What's up, Diablo?
Hey, good Friday afternoon, guys. I hope it's been a good week, and I hope you're finishing up on a strong note.
Well, we've got two more hours, so we'll let the audience be the judge of that, but so far, so good.
Hey, your earlier comment, I can confirm with you. Anderson County High School has never won a state championship. In fact, this is their first appearance in the state championship game.
Well, there you go. First time for the Mavs.
Yes, it is. So we hope the first time's a charm.
Are you a Maverick?
Work in Anderson County.
Okay. It's a great place to watch a game, man. I hope they get it done tomorrow.
I agree. Hey, gentlemen, what happens if we go to the Cotton Bowl? What is the differential in money between that and the Orange Bowl?
It's a good question. I don't have that in front of me. I don't know how much it matters. As I understand it, and this is a topic that comes up every year, and I can never remember exactly how this works, but I'm pretty sure they put all the SEC bowl money into a big pot and distribute it evenly.
I'd say Vanderbilt loves that.
So, yes, indeed. Even Vanderbilt will get as much money as Tennessee and Mississippi State get. Now, do you make a little bit more if you go to the playoff? I think there might be something in there about that helps out. But I believe that's my understanding. We can ask Trey about this too later. But I believe that's how the SEC does it. They put it all in a big pot, all 9 or 10 teams, however many, end up going to bowl games, and then they distribute that evenly 14 ways.
My last question today, guys, is National Signing Day. Is it happening in December, or have I got that messed up?
Yes. Yeah, it happens, I believe, the Wednesday of Christmas week. So whatever that is, like the 19th or 20th, I think.
Hey, guys, thanks for taking my call, and good luck to West tonight and the Mavericks tomorrow, guys. Have a good weekend.
Thank you, Diablo. Appreciate it.
Yeah, the only time you don't get your cut of the money is if you're like in trouble and not able to go to a bowl game.
Yeah, most leagues, the bowls pay out to the conference, mostly split bowl revenue between its member institutions. 50 million dollars base to the SEC, according to Saturdays Down South, from the College Football Playoff. This was actually 8 years ago, so I'm sure it's gone up since then.
Yeah.
But yeah, each bowl's payout goes to the conference. Last year, for both Alabama and Georgia playing in the College Football Playoff, the SEC will receive $12 million and $6 million for each team. Conference receives no bonus for one of its teams reaching the national championship. So, yeah, that's how they do it. I'll find out more about that. Let's get Haji in here next. Speaking of winners, what's up, Haji?
Hello, friends. How are you?
This is your time to shine, my friend. We've got college championship games coming up this week. Let me pull up my a little sheet here so that
there's
we can go along
of
here
money
and
bet
pick
tomorrow,
out a few winners.
So, yeah. There's going to be a lot of money bet tomorrow, so I won't bet anything until then, except I bet the first half Kansas State plus a half a point. tomorrow. That's all I've done on college. I got some fun facts for you about college championship games, though, if you want to hear them. And the New Year's deal thing that Jamie was talking about, Sugar Bowl, New Year's Day is on a Sunday, so you don't have any bowl games on Sunday this year on New Year's Day.
Has it always been that way?
I don't know that. I don't know when the last time New Year's Day fell on a Sunday, but I don't know the answer to that question. But with Sunday Night Football now, probably the first time since Sunday Night Football, I guess, maybe.
Mm. By the way, this is the worst kind of year for a Christmas holiday, with Christmas on a Sunday, because nobody gets any. Everybody knows best Christmases are on Fridays and Tuesdays, because you can parlay that into a four-day weekend. So this is one of those. We got a Sunday Christmas this year. So we'll work our way through that. Hodge, let's start with the Pac-12 today. USC up to a three-point favorite against Utah. We remember that shocker they lost at Utah. They are a three-point favorite. Obviously, it's a win-and-you're-in situation for the Trojans. I don't know if they can get in with a loss tonight. But for folks looking to put down a friendly wager on tonight's action, what would you do in their shoes?
If it goes to three, I'm going to be on Utah. There's five championship games that are rematches. Utah won on that two-point conversion. They pulled the LSU over Alabama play and went for two at the end and got the win. And USC's obviously on a roll, 11-1. If they lose, it's going to be a free-for-all. Everybody's chirping about Alabama again, so I don't know what. How do you want to? I want the chaos of USC and TCU losing, of course. But some people think if TCU loses, they're still in. I don't really like that idea. And if USC loses, I don't know. But if USC loses by more than a touchdown or so, Hooker's back in the mix, I think, for the Heisman. Mm. I don't, you know, because they've already crowned USC's quarterback, right?
Well, I do think style points matter here, Haji, right? Particularly for TCU. I could see them, if they lose a classic 42-41, like I could see them squeezing in as the fourth team. If they lay an egg tomorrow and Chris Klieman beats them down, and you know it's like a 34-13 type game or something, and Kansas State wins, then yeah, I think Ohio State goes in. I mean, people can chirp all they want about Alabama, but unless both USC and TCU get blown out, I don't think they have much of a leg to stand on there.
Well, if I was just going to say, if Utah wins and Kansas State wins, you might want to do a what is that going to be, about a 4:30 something little space tomorrow afternoon.
Yeah.
Just to see what people are thinking. That'd be kind of fun. But anyway, I know you got to get to Lewis in here after a minute, but I was going to say, for guys looking for things to look for tomorrow, in rematches in conference championship games, when both teams are off wins, which in the five big ones, they all are off wins, the under is 65.8%, so almost 60, is almost 2-1 chance that the big games are going to go under. That's the big games, if you want to call North Texas and Texas San Antonio a big game, but it's a rematch, and Utah USC. I like that 67.5 under tonight. Again, you said USC has to, all they have to do is win. You know, same with TCU, Georgia, really. And Michigan, right? So Georgia, I think, is going to be able to, as far as favorites go, I'm liking San Antonio tonight, maybe, and then Georgia, because Daniels is, Jalen Daniels is questionable, and Georgia can salt away a game with their running game, but big favorites, you got to worry about a backdoor cover. And something that goes against that is, in college championship games, favorites laying 12 or more in the history of championships games going back to 92, the underdog is 42%, and the favorite is 37%. So that's a big edge for LSU right there. So, again, I don't know what I'm doing until tomorrow comes. But
no, 17.5 is a big number for – and I haven't been following it closely. Well, I don't know about Daniels. Obviously, that plays into it. But all things being equal, everybody healthy, I'd lean strongly towards LSU there myself.
I like LSU too, and because Georgia just has to win. They don't need style points. They just have to win. So they're not going to. They don't need to do anything special except win. And I think they'll definitely do that. So yeah, we don't want to see LSU win. But what do you think about the other ones? Any questions?
Tulane UCF. That's interesting. I mean, that's a rematch of a game that UCF won there a couple of weeks ago, and I guess Tulane's got revenge on their mind. They're a 4-point favorite there, and seems like most of the money is with the Green Wave.
Yeah, it's moving up to 4, hoping to 2.5, and Central Florida won at Tulane, so you think revenge is a big deal. Also, by the way, in these rematches, the team that won the first game is 45%, so it's not a big trend either way, but the loser is 55% in the rematch, so... I like Fresno's the one that stands out to me as the best, not the most exciting game or the most at stake, but Boise won by 20 at home against Fresno, and now they're just a 3-point favorite in the rematch. So I like Fresno. CGP may have a little something to say about that, but I like Fresno in that one. If at Tulane going to 4, I'm going to probably be leaning towards Central Florida. So I'm liking all these dogs except for San Antonio in the championship game. One more quick one that nobody's going to be watching is when a team coming into a championship game gets blown out by 20 or more on their last game coming in, they are 77% chance to cover in the next game. That would be Coastal. Coastal playing Troy tomorrow. At the same time as Tulane. So, but plus 8.5, there's some value there, and you got a chance to cover, certainly. So that's probably one I'll be on tomorrow.
See what the Fighting Jamie Chadwell's, maybe his last game there, being wooed by Liberty. But, Haji, we got to run, man. Appreciate you dropping some knowledge on us, and may the gambling gods be forever in your favor this weekend.
I feel it. Thanks. And by the way, I got a first of the year breaking news desk theme song change for you. I'll give you a shout next week about that. Throw that out there for you.
Oh, okay.
All right, just for the Council of the Elders to consider.
Breaking news desk theme song change. I don't know how I feel about that. It'd have to be pretty strong. Thank you, Haji. We got to run here. Stay with us. Lucas Widespread Panzeca of 104.5 The Zone in Nashville will join us when we continue right here on The Drive live today at National Law Rex and Farragut. More Fan Run Radio coming up.
The Drive.
This one. Welcome back. The Drive continues. It's Fan Run Radio. Russell Barron, Marcus cruising with you on a Friday afternoon edition of the show. Last football Friday of the year. Hard to believe it's come and gone like this, but here we are. And here we go back to the Big Orange Phillies phone lines where Lucas Panzeca, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville, is standing by. Lucas, good afternoon. How are you, sir?
Afternoon, guys. I'm fantastic. How are you guys doing, Russ? What's your thoughts on 5A state championship tonight?
Well, since you asked, my West Rebels looking for our second state championship in 8 years. I feel pretty good about it. Now, I don't know much about Paige. I mean, that's more your neck of the woods. Can you help me get to know the opponent a little bit tonight?
I've broadcasted somehow 4 Paige games this season, whether it's on a radio, on the zone, or on TV with MyTV30 here locally. And that's a good football team. It's an experienced football team that reached the state championship a year ago, fell short against Walter Nolan and the Powell Panthers. But they can run it. They can sling it around, and they are physical. And if you're able to watch the game, look out for big left tackle Ronan O'Connell, the 6'5", 275-pound junior manning the left side of that Page offensive line. They run behind him a lot, and they're really experienced across the board. So hopefully that's a really good football game with West being undefeated. I looked at that one when the state championships were set and thought that might be the most interesting game of any of the state championship matchups in Chattanooga.
Fantastic. Now, Lucas, I know you are a soccer expert, a guru. That's why we have you on so much during World Cup season here. And I'm sure that you had Morocco and Japan winning their groups heading into the round of 16 here. What do you think about it so far? The World Cup in Qatar, I know we've all got our issues with it, but, man, it's competitively has not disappointed.
No, not at all. I mean, it's been shocker after shocker for Belgium to go home, Germany, Uruguay to all go home out of the group stage, and the way that it's happened in the final moments of these games. I don't remember a World Cup in my life like this where it comes down to those last group stage fixtures where the games are happening simultaneously and the standings, the live standings are constantly changing because of goal differential and now yellow cards as like the seventh tiebreaker has come into play at one point. I mean, there was a short spell a couple days ago where Poland in the live standings while the games were still going was through because of a yellow card. They had less yellow cards than Mexico did, and Mexico ultimately ends up going home because they can see the goal to Saudi Arabia. But the finishes to these groups this week have just been must-see. Every day has delivered. I mean, today, South Korea just ends up going through and knocking Uruguay out. So Uruguay can win their game, and they do. They beat Ghana. Ghana doesn't get their revenge from 2010. But South Korea, with an emotional 2-1 win over Portugal, pushes through to send Uruguay home despite the win. You can't ask for much better when it comes to upsets, just shocking results, and just some great moments that you can just watch as unbridled joy sweeps across entire nations. Name one other sporting event where that can happen. One other sporting event where the entire country of South Korea can all be sharing tears of joy and hugging each other in pure bliss because they've moved on to the round of 16 in the World Cup. Like, there's nothing that even remotely compares to what we're seeing, and it's just been moment after moment in this last week or so.
I was going to say a West High School state championship might bring
other
the world
than
together.
West, other than a West completing an undefeated season.
Yes, yes, but World Cup is a close second for sure as we visit with Lucas Panseca. He started with us here at Fan Run Radio, folks. Now he's made the big city and the big time working at The Zone and on the Titans Radio Network in Music City. Lucas, for folks who like the, you know, South Korea, Japan making it doesn't do a lot for them, Team America back out on the field. This is, we're in tournament play now. This is no longer group play. This is win or go home, taking on the Netherlands, a storied soccer nation. Tomorrow morning, 10 a.m. here Eastern time, we'll be watching this one. What are your thoughts, Lucas? I mean, in years past, this would have been a mismatch, but you've seen this Netherlands team maybe not quite as strong as some of their teams of years past. And this American team, we're hoping, is our golden generation and the best team we've had in a long time, maybe the best team ever. How do you like the Americans' chances against Holland tomorrow?
I like them. I'm more confident as we get closer. Maybe that's just the nature of a lead-up to a big game where you have a vested interest. I feel like that just naturally happens sometimes. But when I look at these two teams, I think there's some more similarities than you would think between the U.S. and the Netherlands. They're young teams. They have dynamic attackers that they rely on specifically for the Netherlands down the left side with Memphis Depay and with Cody Gakpo, who's been the breakout star of this tournament. The PSV forward has scored in every game the Netherlands have played in so far, a contender for the Golden Boot. And they just kind of play in a similar fashion where they want ball control. They want to press you, win it back, and then push forward for a goal. And I think it might make for a fascinating matchup tomorrow morning. The Netherlands has the edge in overall talent. The likes of Virgil van Dijk, one of the best defenders on the planet. And you can go down the list, but they don't have the veteran superstar talent that they've had in years past. When you think of the stretch they had with Arjen Robben and and Robin Van Persie and just a ridiculous array of talent. It's not quite to that extent this time around, but it feels like there's a big opportunity here for the U.S. and what will be a huge challenge, and especially for that midfield for the United States of Yunus Musa, Tyler Adams, and Weston McKennie that has been so good so far in controlling the flow of games when the U.S. kind of want to make a game go at their own pace, then those guys have been able to do that, and I think there's an opportunity to continue to do that here, and if they do, then they'll be very well positioned to match the U.S.'s best ever performance at a World Cup and move on to the quarterfinal.
Lucas, we always give your credentials as being, you know, you have a Brazilian and Italian ancestry heritage. So you are an expert by blood on this show when it comes to this game. Now, I actually have, through my wife, I have some connection here. So I don't know if I've told you this before, but my wife's side of the family, my wife's dad is Dutch, was born in Holland. And so I've been following their team for a long time now, and I was asking him about this game, and here's what he told me. He said, "This is the least aggressive, most timid, most boring Dutch team I've ever seen. Difficult to watch. The U.S. team is much more fun and plays the up-the-field aggressive style Holland always has played. I would be surprised if this Dutch team beats the United States."
Wow. Those are strong words.
That's from a Dutchman.
Those are strong words, but I will take them with a grain of salt. I love that perspective, but I will take it with a grain of salt.
Oh, I think he's totally sandbagging me.
I will talk to my family in Brazil after I talked. I remember talking to them after the Serbia game where Brazil couldn't find a breakthrough in the first half of their opener, and then finally they score with Richarlison. They control the entire game. They get a second one, and they win 2-0. And talking to my uncle and family down there, and it's just the despair. Like, oh my goodness, they just should have won that game 4-5. This team's not going to win. They're young. They're immature. And it's like, Jesus Christ, this is the best roster in the field, and it's not even remotely close. And I'm probably eating my words because they're basically second 11 lost to Cameroon today, even though they still win the group. But I do think that fans of countries with high expectations tend to have kind of a negative feeling like that when those teams aren't overly meeting those expectations. And I think the Netherlands is probably on that level. It's a country that has always had a good program that has, in a lot of ways, revolutionized the game with Johan Cruyff and Total Football. And we don't need to dive into all that stuff from decades ago, but the fact that they've made two finals in a World Cup is really impressive. They've just never gotten over that hump. And when they go into a World Cup, even though they missed the last edition, their expectation is to get to the final and to push to win. So if they don't show that they have the capability to do that early, then I imagine that their fans sour on them pretty quickly. But it's fair to say that it's not the most talented Dutch team that we've seen. But I think they're well organized. I think they're well coached by Louis van Gaal, a very experienced manager at the international and club level. And they have a ton of young talent. So I would not have the confidence in the U.S. that he has. But maybe then that's just me being a battered U.S. men's national team fan.
Yeah, I do wonder about our tactics tomorrow. You know, Berhalter went for it in those first three games, right? And you come out with that mentality because you think you can beat Wales. And they were able to get the point there. You go into the England game with a nothing to lose thing. You might as well go after it, and you get a point there. And then you're in a must-win situation in Iran, so you have to go after it. And they were able to get the point there. I do wonder if you might have a more conservative approach tomorrow, Lucas, knowing that you don't want to get behind against these guys. And I do wonder if they pack it in a little bit more and just sort of pick and choose their spots to go forward. What do you think? Do you think they butt it down a little bit more, or do you just go for it? You're in the round of 16. Well, you're playing Holland. What do you have to lose?
I think you're going to learn based on the starting lineups and one spot in particular at center back, whether it's Walker Zimmerman or it's Cameron Carter-Vickers in the starting lineup. I think it's going to be Zimmerman, meaning it's probably going to be more of an approach like what you're talking about, maybe more conservative in nature and just trying to pick their spots. when Cameron Carter-Vickers came in against Iran, because you're right, it was nothing to lose, win or go home, a draw sends you home here, you have to get 3 points. And Cameron Carter-Vickers, a guy that in his time playing for Celtic in Scotland, has more experience breaking down a low block with that aggressive passing, pressing high up the field. Walker Zimmerman is much more of a natural defender and aerial threat, both offensively and defensively, though he's gotten much better as a passer. But I think we see Zimmerman back in the lineup, meaning the U.S. kind of reverts to what they had been doing before the Iran game, which is just to say it's not an all-out, go for it, go get the win at all costs type of thing. I think they'll be a little more conservative, and that's because of what's going to happen on the side of Sergiño Dest. Sergiño Dest is the most interesting figure in this whole thing. The U.S. men's national team right back, he plays for my AC Milan, born and raised in the Netherlands. He's a dual national. He came up playing for American youth men's national teams, but he had an option when it was time to break into the senior level of whether he wanted to represent the Netherlands, where he was born and raised, or America, where he has citizenship, where he's gotten opportunities at the youth level. And the Netherlands wanted Sergiño Dest. They recruited him heavily. He came up through the system at Ajax, really good player, played for Barcelona, and he picked the U.S. So here he is going up against his home country, and on that right side for the Netherlands, the left side, that's where they want to channel the attack. Memphis Depay and Cody Gakpo combining down that side. The majority of their threat in the attack has come down that left side, which for the U.S. means the right side, and Sergiño Dest at right back. Dest played so high up the field against Iran because that's his strength. He's an attacking player. He can beat you off the dribble. He can combine with quick passing. His struggles have come with recovery defensively and just being positioning in general when it comes to that. He's been a lot better with that in this cup, but I do think that because of that fact of what the Netherlands want to do, how they want to approach the game, Sergiño Dest may have to be a bit more reserved in that sense, as far as hanging back a little bit and picking those moments to move forward rather than just bombing upfield and seeing what they can create and then leaving themselves exposed at the back. So the U.S. will pick their spots. I don't think they're going to hunker down and try to fight for a scoreless draw to head to extra time and maybe penalty kicks. But I don't expect the all-out blitz that you saw against Iran.
Interesting tactical matchup. All right, last thing here, Lucas, and then I want to get your thoughts on this Titans game in Philly on Sunday. What would a win tomorrow mean for American soccer?
Well, it would be the history of U.S. men's national team, of the program. And I say that because, yes, they have been to the quarterfinals before. In 2002, the U.S. went to Korea and a young Landon Donovan and Brian McBride and Claudio Reyna, they powered the U.S. to the final, upset Portugal. I think they beat Mexico along the way, if I'm not mistaken. But that U.S. team was kind of just this scrappy, under-the-radar, you know, grit, outwork you, find-a-way type of team. That's kind of what the U.S.'s identity has been when it comes to international soccer. This team is different. I think this team, so much has been made on the phrase that Greg Berhalter uttered when he took over the job of changing the way the world views American soccer. But this team has tried to do that, and I think a win against the Netherlands, and if the U.S. are just the better team like they were against England, quite frankly, that would go a long way in changing the world, the way not just the world views American soccer, but the way America views American soccer, of the quality that can stack up with some of the best on the planet, and that can be a threat in these major international tournaments. And really, regardless of what they would do after that, it would just set the table for 2026 with the World Cup coming to the United States, and it would kind of bring that idea into people's heads that they can win this thing. I mean, these guys are all 22, 23, the Christian Pulisic and Tyler Adams and Weston McKennie, these guys are all under the age of 25. They should be in their prime in 2026. So it's kind of a moment here for them to make the rest of the world and the U.S. itself fully realize that against what has historically been an international power.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head there. It's a moment, man. It's such an opportunity for those of us who have followed the men's team for a long time. You know, it's always like this is what we dreamed of, was being in these types of games and winning them. And I think, like you said, if you win tomorrow, it sort of legitimizes, and then might be playing Argentina and Messi a week from today.
Yeah.
So We'll see. should be wild. Lucas, talk to me real quick here about the Titans. Underdogs on the road at Philadelphia. Call me crazy, Lucas. This just feels like a classic Mike Vrabel Titans upset spot.
Feels like the Mike Vrabel special, and I think people have been saying that for weeks. National media has been saying that for weeks. The Titans have been kind of this trendy pick to upset the Eagles because what's the Eagles' biggest weakness this season? It's been run defense. What's the Titans' biggest strength? Obviously, that's what they hang their hat on. Here's my concern, though. The Titans have not been able to run the football effectively in the last couple of games. Derrick Henry was fairly limited in Green Bay, but the way the Titans were able to take advantage of that with the passing game helped them win that football game. And Henry was obviously very impactful in that. He had over 80 rush yards and helped out in the screen game, had the touchdown jump pass to Austin Hooper. But in the last two games, specifically last week, Derrick Henry had 17 carries for under 40 yards. That's never happened. He's never had that few yards. He's never had less than 40 yards with that many carries. And the Bengals, that's a lot of what they did. They flat out beat the Titans up front. But I do think that this run game has hit a bit of a lull, and it's not a spot I thought this team would be in, where the pass blocking has generally been better than run blocking in the last few weeks. It's this interesting irony with this offensive line that has always had a massive strength in that area of the game. So that's my concern going in. I think it'll be a good football game. Be interesting, all the talk about A.J. Brown, and he's going to be ready for this game no matter what. This is going to mean a lot to him. But I like the way they match up. I just worry, Russell, about the Titans being able to contain Jalen Hurts. The way that he can hurt them with his legs, to me, is a big concern. Titans have linebackers that can run him down. Their defense is starting to get back to healthy. Bud Dupree back in the lineup. But they didn't really affect Joe Burrow much last week against kind of a maligned Bengals offensive line that's been playing a lot better. Well, this is one of the best offensive lines, if not the best in the NFL. I worry about Hurts' impact with his legs on Sunday. So I will not be surprised at all either way what happens here. I'm just not as all in on the Titans being the upset pick here as people seemingly have been in the last few weeks because of the ways that they've come up short in the run game and on offense.
Ah, man, that's not filling me with a great deal of confidence, Lucas, but I'll say this. I will take the L on Sunday with my beloved Titans if it means the Americans win tomorrow and go through in the round of 16. I will make that trade right now.
Are you kidding me? That's the easiest trade I've ever heard. Titans have another week to get another win. Americans would have to wait 4 more years. So, yes, that's what this means. That's what this tournament means to the entire world. That's an easy one for me, too, Russ. I'm all on board with that.
All right, Lucas, appreciate you, my friend. We will get you on, regardless of tomorrow's outcome, to break it down with us next week. Enjoy the weekend. We'll be listening for you on the Titans broadcast on Sunday, and appreciate your time, my friend.
All right, guys, enjoy the game tomorrow. Appreciate it all.
Yes, Lucas Widespread Panzeca, 104.5 The Zone in Nashville. Follow him on Twitter, at Lucas Panzeca, a proud, I don't know if he's proud. He wouldn't tell us if he's not, but I'm going to go ahead and assume he is somewhat prideful of his graduation from the Fan Run Academy of Broadcasting. We appreciate him jumping on here with us this afternoon. We got to take a quick break. Open up the phone lines for you, 865-546-8200. Your number to get on board, 546-8200. The Drive continues. Back with more after this.
The Drive.
Hey, Big Orange Country.
Welcome back. The Drive continues. Fan Run Radio live today. National RX in Farragut. Russell Bear and Marcus Young back with you on this edition of The Drive. Lucas Panzeca of 104.5 The Zone in Nashville. Bear, what did you learn?
I didn't realize that Philadelphia's run defense was as weak as it is, apparently.
Yeah, I didn't know that either. They've just been so good this year. I haven't really paid attention to whatever their flaws are. I guess I did that game against Washington that they lost. The Commanders were able to kind of line up and mash on them a little.
Yeah, I mean, but Brian Robinson's just, he's a cut above, and it should be interesting to see how that plays out. What about the NFC East as a whole being, you know, going into this season, it was, you know, kind of maligned. But right now, I mean, you'd be hard pressed to show me a better division, top to bottom.
No, pretty good. I mean, the Eagles haven't run away with it yet. They're 10-1. Cowboys are 8-3. Giants are 7-4, and the Commanders are 7-5. Yeah, it's the only division in football. Well, no, the only division in football where everybody is above 500.
Yeah.
AFC East, everybody's above 500 except for the Patriots. They're 6-6 after last night's not so great showing against the Bills.
Well, Mac Jones yelling at Matt Patricia. That's just dumb as hell, isn't it? Having Matt Patricia as your offensive coordinator?
Yeah. It feels like Belichick. I don't know that he's damaging his legacy here in his post-Brady years, but that was just silly. For folks who don't follow the NFL that closely, Matt Patricia was his defensive coordinator for years there, went to Detroit as a defensive head coach, failed there, and now he's come back and they made him the offensive coordinator. And he has no experience coordinating an offense, but you're going to put him in charge of the offense for an NFL team with a young quarterback?
Yeah. That is
probably a miracle that they're 6-6. They're not out of it. Marcus, your thoughts on the Titans this weekend at Philly. Any chance there?
Russell, I'm going to tell you something.
Marcus, you're so negative when it comes to the Titans, dude. Seriously, man.
Hold on. You didn't let me say what I was going to say, Russell.
I can tell by your tone what you're going to say. Go ahead.
Russell, this is what I'm thinking. All right. It's going to be a tough game. I'm going to give the Titans some credit here. They've been playing a lot better of late, despite what happened against Cincinnati. I think it's going to be a closer game than we think.
But
it is going to come down to, can our defense manage the Eagles' offense? They are a very good offense. Hurts is playing MVP level right now. So do we have a chance? Yes, the Titans always have a chance in any game they play. The unfortunate part is right now we have only beaten one team with a winning record, and that's the Commanders. So I hope they pull this out. I would love to go to Philly, give them their second loss, shut AJ up, because he's still talking. Despite my love for him, he's still talking and he needs to stop. But, you know, we'll see.
He almost made it. He almost made it through his Titans analysis without lamenting AJ Brown and the trade to the Eagles.
Yeah. It was close.
Could he quite do it? Could he bear?
No. Not quite.
Listen, I can be critical of those I love.
I mean, it's not necessarily critical. It's just
sometimes that's all you can be, Marcus. Love you, though.
Being able to accept reality.
Love you guys, too.
865-546-8200 is your number to get on the Big Orange Phillies phone lines this afternoon. 546-8200. All fan-run callers and guests appear via the magic of the Big Orange Phillies phone lines. And if you're looking for a place to watch the Pac-12 championship tonight, I'm sure they'll have the high school games on as well, or any of the championship games tomorrow or an NFL Sunday, might I humbly suggest Big Orange Phillies in Halls. It's a great spot, great comfortable booths. They got a nice bar. They got pool tables. They got TVs everywhere. They've got great food, cold beer, and everything you could possibly look for in a sports bar setting. Big Orange Phillies, 6625 Maynardville Pike in Halls. You can get it delivered via Grubhub. Check out their full menu at BigOrangePhillies.com. We love Big Orange Phillies. You're going to love them too. As we break things down with you here this afternoon, Trey Wallace is going to jump in hour number three from Outkick, and we'll get his thoughts on a couple things going on in the world of college football. It's coaching search season. Saw Trey had Dan Mullen on his podcast. I've heard Mullen's name connected with the vacant offensive coordinator jobs at both South Carolina and Kentucky. How do you feel about the prospect of a Tim Banks defense defending Dan Mullen's offense next year, Bear?
Not real thrilled, but I would think Mullen, he just, if I were him, I would just continue to do TV for another year before I take the OC position in either one of those places. That just seems like where careers go to die.
Yeah, I don't know about that Carolina job. I mean, obviously they found some success towards the end of the year, but Rattler doesn't seem like a Dan Mullen QB to me. If he takes the Kentucky job, it would, to me, if I'm in his shoes, it's all about who am I going to get at quarterback. If Levis is gone, who's going to be my QB next year? It's got to be, I don't think they have anybody on the roster who's any good. The backup who played against South Carolina was terrible. So you got to go in the portal and get yourself a QB, right, who can run the Dan Mullen,
yeah,
Urban Meyer spread option.
100% you do.
Doesn't seem like anybody's going to be beating down his door to hire him as a head coach. So, coordinator, I mean, that was his thing, right? I mean, he was good, and people say, well, you got to be able to recruit. Well, you know, if you're a coordinator, you recruit a little bit, but you don't have to be Rodney Garner out there on the trail either. And if you're a head coach who can't recruit at a place like Florida, that's probably not going to work out, and it didn't work out for Dan Mullen. But as an offensive coordinator for Kentucky or South Carolina, I mean, that seems like a solid hire, particularly for a defensive-minded head coach like Mark Stoops or a, I guess, whatever Shane Beamer is, special teams-minded head coach.
Yeah, what is his – is he a defensive coach or
– I mean, he was always special teams. I think he coached tight ends. Or maybe he was defensive. I don't know. He was never a coordinator on either side of the ball.
Huh.
Saw him popping off at Tennessee fans last night.
He was also on that deal with Trey last night. Trey's new podcast.
Listen, there are a lot bigger games in South Carolina on the schedule next year. But if there's one game that...
I'm going to pound their eyes shut.
Feral John.
Around. Yeah.
Ed Nealon. Gotta be. Yeah, gotta be.
Can't stand him.
You talk to me about winning that game by three, I don't want to hear it. Nothing less than a beatdown is acceptable against South Carolina next year. Got to make him know about it, too. Stay with us. Hour number three of The Drive coming up. We take a quick timeout. We're back with more right after this on Fan Run Radio.
The Drive.
Hey guys, if ED